What's good, everybody? Welcome to the Sports Business Podcast, a Spotify/Anchor original podcast. I am your host, Eric Compton. This podcast is available on all platforms wherever you get your podcast from. Make sure you hit the like and subscribe button. You can find me on Instagram at Money Compton. You can also find me on the Twitterverse /X at Sports Business. You can also email the show, sportsbusiness@gmail.com. Coming up on today's show, we're going to talk about the NFL Championship Weekend winners and then also the losers, because losers, they sure was some losers. We're also going to talk about some of these NFL head coaching hires and hires that didn't take place. Then we're going to talk about some NBA fast break takes. And before we get up out of here, we definitely going to get into the dummy of the day. But first things first, I saw last week or this past week, the NBA. Yo, the NBA this year has just really annoyed the hell out of me. I don't know what it is about this year's NBA, but for some reason, the NBA just ain't hitting for me like it should. I saw that they were marketing or promoting a whole bunch of games that were quote-unquote rivalry week. And I think I saw one that was the Knicks against the Nets in Brooklyn. First of all, that is not a rivalry. You can try to market that as much as you want to, but the Brooklyn Nets is pretty much the LA Chargers / LA Rams version of the NBA. Like, people go to the Nets games to watch the away team. I want to say I've been to about, I know for a fact I went to 2 Nets games last year alone, and I think I've been to about 4 or 5 Nets games, and I can tell you all right now, them is nothing but a glorified away game for the opposing team, or a glorified home game, I should say, for their opposing team. So I saw that. I saw the Lakers against the Warriors, which it's not really a rivalry because the Warriors, when at their peak, the Lakers were trash, and then the Lakers at their peak, the Warriors were trash. So it's never really been a rivalry, really, up until LeBron got to the Lakers, and even then, it really ain't been hitting on nothing. The LA Clippers against LA Lakers, that's not a rivalry. I can tell you that right now. That's also a glorified home game for opposing teams when they go visit the Clippers. But anyways, NBA, step y'all game up. Like, I know y'all are trying to do whatever you can to boost ratings, but that ain't how you do it. But we'll talk about that later on in this show. But I know everyone's here to talk about NFL Championship Weekend, and we're going to start with the early game, which was the Kansas City Chiefs ended up beating the Baltimore Ravens. Now, I told y'all on this entire season, as bad as the Kansas City Chiefs have looked, I was not going to count out Michael Jordan, a.k.a. Patrick Mahomes. I just was not going to count him out. No matter, he could have been out there with 10 newborn babies, and I still wouldn't have counted him out. And yesterday, he kind of made things happen. The defense for the Kansas City Chiefs being able to hold that high-powered Baltimore Ravens offense, which I think was averaging about 28 points per game, which is highest in the league, to hold them boys for 10 points total and a field goal in the second half was very, very, very telling for me. And also, here's the thing. I'm not going to say Lamar Jackson choked or, you know, he's overrated. I don't think he's any of that, because if that's the case, then is Josh Allen overrated, or did he choke last week when he played against Patrick Mahomes and the boys? The thing about this is, if you look at the AFC landscape right now, and just quarterbacks alone, you got Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen with the Bills, CJ Stroud with the Houston Texans, Joe Burrow with the Bengals, Trevor Lawrence with the Jaguars, Justin Herbert with the Chargers, Aaron Rodgers, depending on how he looking like, with the Jets, and then you got the nasty man himself and Deshaun Watson. I think I just rattled off at least 7 or 8 quarterbacks, and out of those 7 or 8 quarterbacks, they're probably anywhere between top 10 and top 15 quarterbacks in the entire league. So, with that being said, here's the thing. Patrick Mahomes is Michael Jordan. He is the Michael Jordan of the football, of the NFL. And to be honest with you, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, them boys ain't none. But Patrick Ewing's, Reggie Miller's, Steve Smith, Glenn Rice's, that are just there just to be there. Like, they are great players. There's nothing that you can take away from them boys. They just in the paint at the wrong time because there's this dude who is just going to be having the AFC on lockdown. I believe this is either his fifth or sixth year as a full-time starter, and he has been to five consecutive AFC championship games, and out of the four of the last 5 years, the Kansas City Chiefs have been to the Super Bowl with two victories already. This dude is creating a resume where he's arguably going to be the greatest football player of all time at the rate he's going. Like, if he retired today, he's already going to the Hall of Fame. He's already got two Super Bowl MVPs, two league MVPs. Been to the Super Bowl three times already. Like, this dude already has a Hall of Fame career literally in the span of 6 years, which is wild to think of. So Lamar Jackson, yeah, he could have played a little bit better. Like, that interception was horrible where he threw it to three different, like, there's three Kansas City Chiefs there to that one wide receiver. But, you know, I don't think he played a bad game. I think he just didn't perform up to where he needed to be, which was he was at an MVP quarterback all year long. But that's not a knock. And I was talking to my cousin, and he texted me while I was watching the game. He was like, man, the Ravens defense, man, they playing. And I was like, yeah, but ain't nobody going to talk about the Ravens defense only giving up 17 points when they're losing. And they did shut the Kansas City Chiefs out after this in the second half. But that's not what I saw. I saw a Baltimore Ravens offense that looked spoke. Like, they looked super duper spoked. And if y'all don't know what spoke means, that means they looked scared. Looked like the moment was a little too big for them. The defense, on the other hand, you know, I don't know. They had about three personal fouls. So I don't know if they were just too amped up or they were trying to compensate for the lack of intensity that the offense had. But, I mean, you know, yeah, they gave up 17 points, but the Ravens only had 10 points. So it really, all that stuff kind of falls on the mood point. It doesn't matter. They lost. So, hats off to Patrick Mahomes. I keep telling y'all boys, y'all need to listen to me. I know what I'm talking about. I told you all year long, I'm not counting Mahomes out. I'm just not. Well, this is the first year he got to go on the road. So, this dude is Michael Jordan. Like, he's going to figure it out. And clearly he did. So, the Kansas City Chiefs, they're going to their fourth Super Bowl in the last 5 years, which is, you know, Patrick-esque as far as creating a dynasty. So, you know, let's see if they're going to be able to do the back-to-back championship run, which would be the first time that hasn't happened in over 20 some odd years. So they're literally cementing their names right there as far as the next dynasty of the NFL. Now, with that being said, let's talk about the late game. And I got a homie of mine earlier this season. He was like, man, why the NFL keep talking about Taylor Swift? You know, they need to be talking about the Lions. They need to be talking about the Lions. The Lions are a feel-good story. I said, first of all, the Lions are nothing but losers, okay? The Lions are having a pretty good season, a nice little golf clap season, but they're nothing but losers, okay? I said that when the Baltimore Ravens opened up that can of whoop-ass on them boys, that was a bad look. Thanksgiving Day, when they wet the bed, when that should have been a homecoming game against the Green Bay Packers, which essentially, if you think about it, that really was the Green Bay Packers coming out party where they were like, all right, we can figure this out, and we got this under control. And the Detroit Lions wet the bed on national TV against the Green Bay Packers on Thanksgiving Day. And I knew right then and there, I was like, these guys are losers. They are legitimately losers. And then, you know, they just don't know what it's like to win. Think about it. I am 36 years old. The last time the Lions were in the NFC Championship game, it was in 91. I was 4 years old. So between 91 to 2024, they had only been in the playoffs, I want to say, two or three times. And they're just now getting their first two victories this year. That is Loserville for me, okay? They are nothing. They are the NFC version of the Cleveland Browns. Just a team full of freaking losers. All right? Now, the thing about this is, your boy Dan Campbell, everybody love him. And I like him. Like, I think he's a great coach. However, if you swapped out Dan Campbell and put Brandon Staley, the former Chargers head coach, and you put him in that same predicament, what's the difference? Everybody hated Brandon Staley. Everybody couldn't wait for Brandon Staley to get up out of town. But Dan Campbell, you know, we going to be biting off kneecaps, and we going to be getting up and taking another chunk of kneecaps out, and we going to do all that rah-rah stuff is cool and all. But hey, man, at the end of the day, you kind of got to use your head and realize that, hey, I'm on the road. I'm still up by 14. Why am I still going for it on fourth down? And, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, it helped them out all year long. That's how they played all year long. I also remember in that Thanksgiving game, he went for a fake punt in his own inside of his own 30 against the Packers, and that blew up in his face. So, yeah, we can say that, you know, his aggressive play call has been giving him a lot of success. But there's the bad times have been a lot more of a damper than the good times. And I was talking to my homeboy because it was funny. During halftime, I talked to my boy. And I was already kind of trying to, the wheels were turning in my head as far as what was today's show going to look like. And I was like, ooh, you know, as bad as Brock Purdy looked, do we still have a Kaepernick curse? Or do we still have the Santa Clara curse? For my Bay Area people that are listening, y'all too know those curses that I'm talking about. And I was thinking about it. And I told him specifically, I said, I think the Niners are going to wet the bike. And I don't see how the Niners can come back unless Dan Campbell does some crazy stuff, which, you know, it ended up happening. I said, I think on a confidence level, as far as the Niners coming back, I think I marked them at a 2. That's opening drive where they got Deebo Samuel involved and they were able to march down the field. And I was like, okay, well, you know, they could have made it and figured it out. But it was the offense where Dan Campbell was just running the ball down their throat. Amon-Ra St. Brown was just, you know, just getting, they just had chunk plays of just 10 plus yard plays over and over and over again. And I was like, well, the offense for the Niners didn't look bad outside of Brock Purdy's really, really bad interception. They just can't stop these boys. They cannot stop a nosebleed when it came to the Detroit Lions. But when they got in within field goal range the first time and it was 4th and 2, I was literally saying, kick the field goal, kick the field goal, kick the field goal. And he ended up going for it, which I thought was a stupid idea, and ended up biting him in the butt. And the crazy thing about it is the Lions lost by 3 points. They had two different scenarios where they could have went for a field goal, and this dude wanted to put all his chips on the table and wanted, I don't know what he was trying to prove. I don't know what he was trying to prove outside of the fact that this is what we're going to do. If you think about that Dallas Cowboys game, and you can say that they got hosed or, you know, the refs were on the Cowboys side, whatever the case may be. Didn't nobody tell him to keep going for 2 points after the first time it didn't work, but yet he kept doing it and doing it and doing it until it ended up ultimately costing them the game. So yes, the ref may have played a hot part in it, but he should have just went for the extra point, played into overtime, and seen how it would have went out. That's how I would have played that out. But this dude, Dan Campbell, is Brandon Staley 2.0. But the caveat is, this is the first year that the Lions had really gotten any notoriety, because they were the first time, like I said, in forever that they have been relevant, so that they got a little bit more shine on. But if you look at Dan Campbell's record over the last few years of these boneheaded risk-taking calls, he's not going to last long in the league. And then on top of that, like I said, the Lions were losers. And I told y'all I had to see the Detroit Lions go all the way to the Super Bowl. And then for me to even believe in them, they'd have to win the Super Bowl. And I still don't know if I'd have believed in them. So I don't have to worry about that. But what really made me think about the Lions being losers were, in his press conference last night, Dan Campbell said something to the realm of, it's really, really hard to win in this league, and I don't know if we'll ever be able to come back here again. Bro, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? You played probably the best team in football, and you played them all the way up until the T, and had you made a couple of different adjustments here and there, y'all would be coming to Vegas and making things happen and playing for the Super Bowl. But for you to even say that, and you don't even know what you got going on coming into the offseason, say, oh, I don't know if we'll be back. Most people will be like, yeah, we'll be back. You know, we'll take this as a lesson learned. We'll figure some things out, and then, you know, we'll be back. We know what we got to do, but we'll be back. But for you to come out and be like, flat out just say on record, oh, I don't know if we're going to be back. It's really, really hard to be, takes what it, you know, to do what it has to be to come back here again. No, bro, the Lions are losers, okay? I said it all year long. I didn't believe in them. I still don't believe in them. And you can thank your crazy-ass coach for sitting there going for it on fourth down like he's playing Madden or he's playing NFL Streets, where you got to be able to score in 4 plays. If not, then you got to punt to give the ball back over to the other team. But the Lions are losers. I've been telling you all season long, I didn't believe in them. And it's not even like the game was close. Like, the Lions were smoking these boys, and they had a straight meltdown because the coach wanted to play bonehead football, wanted to take all these unnecessary risks for no damn reason, and look what ended up happening. Blew up in the face. And I'm going to tell y'all right now, if you really peep game, the NFC North is going to be a little bit more interesting than what a lot of people are thinking. And the reason why I say that is we done found out Jordan Love is a bona fide star in the NFL. He's a great quarterback for the Green Bay Packers. We didn't know that. Captain Kirk Cousins, depending on how he's looking coming off this Achilles, I'm pretty sure he's going to stay with the Vikings, and they just won the division last year. And they didn't play all. They were missing a quarterback this year. And then you got the Chicago Bears that I think they won either 7 or 8 games this year with a whole bunch of broken pieces. And they got the number one overall draft pick where either they're going to keep Justin Fields or they're going to trade out of it and get a fleece of picks and build up their team. So you're looking at an NFC North division that can be a little bit more interesting than just going chalk and just assuming the Lions will be back next year. So maybe there is some truth that, you know, they may not be back for another 30-some-odd years, which is cool. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. The Super Bowl's here in Las Vegas, and I was talking to some people, and we was like, man, I don't know how I feel about Detroit, Michigan just rolling up in here with their now and later Gators on, coming up in here during the Super Bowl. But don't have to worry about it. And I don't think we'll ever have to worry about it in our lives because the Lions are straight losers. All right? Losers. They deserved everything that they got yesterday. Can't tell me nothing. But anyways, let's move on to the San Francisco 49ers. Hey, man. I say this because I'm from the Bay Area. And I started off as a 49er fan. When Jerry Rice went to Oakland, that is when I became a Raider fan because Jerry Rice was my favorite player of all time to this day. So I say all that to say that I am one of those Raider fans that don't hate the Niners at all. In fact, I root for the Niners. Like, if you follow me on social media, you see what Niner drip on. Like, I am that one dude who has no issues with putting on some Niner drip. Like, the Niners are cool. Got no issues with them. I will say this. The Brock Purdy is a game manager talk needs to cease fire immediately. Because everything that Brock Purdy did yesterday is what we were expecting Lamar Jackson to do yesterday against the Kansas City Chiefs. My man's extended plays with his feet, which, I'm going to be honest with you, Brock Purdy was out here looking like Michael Vick yesterday. I didn't know my man could run that damn fast. Especially in the second half. Now, that first half interception he threw was horrible. That was a terrible pick. However, I don't know if they had a bottle of Mike's secret stuff from Space Jam and they were able to just channel their inner child and make things happen and have dig themselves out. But also, they were playing against the Lions. So I don't know what the panic meter was on a scale of 1 to 10 when they went into the locker room. Because I'm pretty sure somebody was like, hey, man, we're playing the Lions. We'll figure it out. But all jokes aside, the Niners this year, the knock on them was they don't know how to come from behind. They have played 2 games in this postseason where they've had to come from behind and win. And that takes a lot of work. That is the stress level to that have for that to take place and for them to be able to overcome 2 deficits and 1 being a 3 possession deficit and 17 points and to come back and just roar back and go 27 unanswered points and ultimately win by 3. That's stressful and that is not something that is sustainable. Now, I'm not giving my Super Bowl picks this week, but I will say that all of the slander of Brock Purdy being a game manager needs to stop. Brock Purdy was the main reason yesterday on why the Niners were able to come back. Now, the defense also, I don't know what happened. Like, the Niners defense in the first half literally looked like a Pop Warner team playing against an NFL team. Like, they looked like they were just lethargic. They were sleepwalking. I'm seeing Fred Warner just kind of just, you know, some lazy arm, you know, just ole tackling and not trying to go give max effort. And then the second half, it just flipped the switch where this dude was the all-pro linebacker and was out here stuffing people. You know, Nick Bosa had 2 sacks where he's kind of been non-existent all year long. Chase Young had a great game. Randy Gregory made things happen. Eric Armstead, I think, is the one either that recovered the fumble or Gibson is the one that forced the fumble. And I think Armstead recovered the fumble. But the defense just woke up, and that was really, really weird because the defense in the second half is the defense that we have been seeing pretty much this entire year. So I'm very, very interested to see, you know, the Niners, they better not be, and I know they're not. The Niners are not taking the Kansas City Chiefs lightly, being the fact that this is a rematch of the Super Bowl 4 years ago with a lot of your main characters are kind of still here. You know, you take away Jimmy Garoppolo and Tyreek Hill, your main character, the cast is pretty much the same. You're talking about Debo Samuel. I don't know if Christian McCaffrey was on that Super Bowl team in 2020. I got to look back. I'm going to say he wasn't because they had Mostert. They had Mostert, so there's no way Christian McCaffrey was there. So you still got Kittle. You still got Debo. You still got Ayuk. And you got Patrick Mahomes. You got Chris Jones. You got Travis Kelce. So, you know, the main characters are there. So this is going to shape up to be a very, very interesting Super Bowl. However, I will say this. The Niners get down more than 10 points against the Kansas City Chiefs. You can cancel Christmas for them. You can cancel the quest for six. So I don't know what Kyle Shanahan has planned, because the Kansas City Chiefs defense is far more superior than the defense that they saw, not even last year when they played, but also in the Super Bowl that went all the way up until 2020. So I'm not giving my picks just yet. Do I think the Niners can beat the Chiefs? Yeah, absolutely, on a great day. But they can't be playing from behind. Like, they're going to have to come out, smoke these boys. This also gives Debo Samuel another week to kind of heal that shoulder injury. So, you know, everyone's kind of probably resting. Everyone's actually implementing their game plans this week. So I'm pretty sure everyone's actually practicing starting Wednesday. And then I'm assuming they come into town Sunday, I think, is when they're expected to be here, with opening night being Monday for Super Bowl press week. So the game plan is already being put in play now. So the preparations are already being put together now. And then the walkthroughs will just be nothing but walkthroughs heading into next week. So those are your championship week. My review, I thought the games were good. But I also, you know, when I saw the Lions lose, I was just like, well, can't say that I'm surprised. So it is what it is. We got, I think, a great Super Bowl coming up. And here's another thing. All you weirdos need to shut the hell up about this stupid script, the bettors, and all this other dumb stuff that y'all be talking about. Like, it is, like, I have had it up to here with y'all weirdos talking about, oh, this is the NFL wanted Taylor Swift to, you know, the Swifties, and all. Y'all sound stupid and y'all sound weird. Oh yeah, this is scripted. Just shut up. Just because you lost your little crazy ass $3 parlays, y'all want to sit here and talk about it's scripted. Just shut up. I'm pretty sure if I was a football player and I found out that this was scripted, nobody's playing. So just knock it off with the script. Y'all sound idiotic, and y'all sound worse than the conspiracy theories of who shot JFK. All right, just knock it off. Just knock it off. Anyways, let's talk about these NFL head coaching jobs vacancies that got filled. So Raheem Morris got a job with the Atlanta Falcons last week, which all roads were kind of leading to Bill Belichick possibly getting that job, because he had met with the Falcons team owner Arthur Smith a few times. Seems like there was a little bit of a disagreement with Bill Belichick, the former coach of the Patriots, wanting too much player personnel power while there's already a GM there. And it sounds like they was like, all right, bro, you asking for too much. We're going to go ahead and check up the deuces and keep it pushing. Which leads now, there's only two vacancies left, and all roads are leading that offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions will be taking the Washington Lionel Richie and the Commandos job. Ben Johnson will be taking that head coaching vacancy. And I don't know what Seattle's doing, but they've been very, very hush-hush about their hire as far as their coach search goes. After Pete Carroll, who had been there for over 10 plus years, got him to two Super Bowls, won one, and a lot of success all them years. They've been very, very hush-hush, and I think all roads were leading that Dan Quinn was going to get that job, being the fact that he had been the defensive coordinator during the Legion of Boom days. But after the Cowboys wet the bed, it's kind of been like, oh no. So that has been very, very interesting. But I said this, I feel like, last week or the week before, that you'd be an idiot if you called Bill Belichick. And I get it. Yeah, he's won six championships. He's been to nine Super Bowls, I think. Eight or nine Super Bowls. And then he's got two as a defensive coordinator with the Giants. And I said, you'd be an idiot to call this man. One, I feel like the game has passed him. If you look at his draft stock outside of Rob Gronkowski, who else has he drafted on the offensive side of the ball? Like, his player personnel selection have been horrible. Just downright just lemon booty. And so nobody wants to deal with that, especially in today's day and age in NFL, where, you know, players are marketing themselves a little bit more, and there's been a rumor, you know, it's been said that Bill Belichick has such a stranglehold on how players are even having media availability, what they can do, what they can't do as far as marketing themselves. These young Thundercats ain't trying to hear all that right now, man. So, especially when you got players now with NIL money coming into the league where it's like, man, I already got millions of dollars. You know, I'm already making money. Like, you can't tell me what to do. So I'm not shocked that Bill Belichick more than likely will be standing up when the musical chairs songs is over and he doesn't have a seat to sit in, which to me, honestly, I'm okay with it. Another shocker to me is Mike Vrabel, the former Tennessee Titans coach, has not gotten a job. Like, that's very, very interesting. Like, I would have thought that Gerard Mayo, who's now the coach of the Patriots, I thought that Mike Vrabel would have got that job with the Patriots, but that didn't even happen. So that's really, really interesting that he hasn't gotten any love yet. So really, really interesting. I will say this, the Jim Harbaugh hire for the the LA Chargers is just made the AFC West what it should have been 2 years ago when you had Devontae Adams coming there. You had Russell Wilson going to the Broncos initially. You had Kansas City, and then you still had Justin Herbert, you know. But now, if I am Antonio Pierce, who is now they have removed the interim tag off of him, I'm taking the Chargers a lot more serious than what everyone else is. And Jim Harbaugh, one thing about Jim Harbaugh, he is a weirdo. However, players love to play for him. Fans seem to, you know, for the most part, fans love that dude. I mean, he's definitely, I wouldn't say he's socially awkward, but he's definitely an interesting person if you look into, you know, some of his views on certain things in life. But even with those things that he talks about, he's still the homie, which players can respect that. So, Jim, I will say this about the Chargers. The Chargers are going to be a lot more focused. Teams ain't going to be sleeping on them boys. And he is definitely probably made the Chargers the second best team in the AFC West, which isn't saying much because you got Kansas City, and outside of that, it was just the Raiders, Broncos, and Chargers, which was But with all of that talent that the Chargers have, which I know they have a lot of salary cap issues between Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, I think they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do with Khalil Mack, Joey Bosa. They got a lot of financial cap issues, but if anybody can turn sugar, you know, some doo-doo into sugar real quick, it's your boy Harbaugh. So, I mean, if you think about his tenure with the 49ers, he made Alex Smith, I think, within the first 2 years, the 49ers were going to the NFC Championship game and a couple of plays away from beating the New York Giants. So, Jim Harbaugh is a great coach. As a diehard Raider fan, I am very, 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 very worried about the Chargers now. So, and Broncos, and whatever. They don't have a quarterback. But, yeah, those are your NFL head coach takings right now. Looks like there's essentially 1.5 jobs that are still available. Like I said, all roads look to lead that Ben Johnson, the current offensive coordinator for the Detroit Lions, will be getting that job for the Washington, Lionel Richie, and the Commandos. And Seattle's just been, they've been just low-key. I will say this, though. If Ben Johnson gets that job with the Commandos, Airbnb is going to be very, very sought after. And if I'm Antonio Pierce, the head coach of the Raiders, I might pick up the phone and see what he's up to. But that's neither here nor there. Let's get into these NBA fast break takes. Now, last week, this story was a little wild to me. And I was shocked, but not shocked, but shocked at the same time when the Milwaukee Bucks fired first-year head coach Adrian Griffin. There had already been hearing rumblings about something about the Bucks were off this year. Mind you, the Bucks, I think right now, are second in the Eastern Conference behind Boston. But there had been rumblings that the Bucks defensively have just looked horrible. And I was like, well, duh. And this is no knock on Dame Lillard. Like, shout out to Oakland, California. He ain't Drew Holiday when it comes to the defensive side of the ball. So, yeah, you're going to get an explosive, you know, 25, 30 points a night with Dame Dollar, but he ain't going to be able to be that defensive anchor around the perimeter. And that's just not him. That's not in his bag. And I thought the trade for Freaky, you know, to help Freaky Greeky stay in Milwaukee to get Dame, I thought that was a little desperate. Yes, you do definitely need another star to come down there in Milwaukee and help out, but I felt like that was a little desperate. What could they have gotten instead of Dame Dollar? I don't know. Maybe an RJ Barrett. But you could have tooled it a little bit more geared towards just, you know, him not having to do so much on the defensive side. Now, I will say this. Do I agree? Here's the thing. If you were going to fire Adrian Griffin going into the season, why'd you hire him in the first place? They had hired Adrian Griffin before they even traded for Damian Lillard, which is cool. Now, if that's the case, then if you knew that you wanted to get Damian Lillard before you even have the head coaching job, then maybe you should have expanded your search a little bit more broader and try to see who else was out there that's a little bit more seasoned. I will say this, though. Bringing in Glenn Doc Rivers is not going to solve your problems. If anything, that's probably going to set you back 1,000 years. Here's the thing. Doc Rivers has not been to the NBA Finals since 2009 or 10. That is damn near 15 years since the last time Glenn Rivers has ever been to the NBA Finals. And no team in the NBA history holds on to that to their championship more than that 08 Boston Celtics team. Boy, you'd have thought they had a doggone 97, 98 Bulls or something like that, the way they be gloating around here in these streets with Doc Rivers as a coach. Doc Rivers has given them more 3-1 leads in the postseason. He took a Clippers team that didn't even make it to the Western Conference Finals. And he took this... I don't even know. Like I said, I don't even know how he even got the Philadelphia 76ers job. I thought that was a bad hire from the get-go. But whatever. But going to get Doc Rivers, who allegedly was a... what's the word? He was an unofficial consultant for Adrian Griffin. Like, if that ain't just trifling, I don't know what is. Like, that is a whole bunch of conniving, backstabbing BS going on up in Milwaukee. But if you think that Glenn Doc Rivers is going to solve your problems, Milwaukee, you got a whole nother world hurting. Like, if anything, this team will probably be out in the second round. Not to mention, they were out in the first round last year against Miami as the number one seed. Is the Milwaukee Bucks, and you're telling me that you're possibly going to do that again with Glenn Rivers? You guys are crazy. Here's the thing. At this point, the team is what it is with the Milwaukee Bucks. They're not going to get any better on defense. Like, I'm pretty sure Rivers is going to be able to figure out a couple of different... He's going to be able to plug in a couple of different philosophies here and there, but the thing about Doc Rivers is he doesn't know how to make adjustments, and that's why he always utterly fails in the playoffs, is because at the end of the day, yeah, it's a little bit of coaching, but if you don't know how to make in-game adjustments during the playoffs, that's where your money's being made at. That's where the coaches get paid the big dollars. If you think about Nick Nurse was able to figure some things out against the Golden State Warriors in 2019. If you think about even with the 2016 team with Ty Lue, they were able to figure some things out against the Golden State Warriors. Even, you know, but for Doc Rivers to keep getting a head coaching job is straight up criminal. We done seen what you is. We don't need to know what else you got. What you is what you is. And if you're telling me that you guys keep hiring this coach who's not been in the NBA Finals in almost 15 damn years, who's given up more 3-1 leads, what are we doing? What are we doing? So I'm not trying to say that I'm wishing the Milwaukee Bucks any type of bad luck. But at the end of the day, yeah, y'all put your set up yourselves for failure. Y'all was better off just rolling with Adrian Griffin. Now, Karl-Anthony Towns is probably going to be the reason why I can't take the Minnesota Timberwolves serious. I just can't. And I'm going to get to the Oklahoma City Thunder in a few minutes. But I saw Karl-Anthony Towns last week, I think, drop 60-some-odd points. And they kept feeding this man the ball, because he had 44 points in the first half. Something like that. It was something crazy. Now, do I think Karl-Anthony Towns is a great player? Yeah. But I also think my man is sniffing himself a little too much. I think he's been the self-proclaimed greatest shooting big man of all time. All right, that's cool and all, but what does that entail? Like, what do you get a badge? Do you get a special locker room? Do they decorate your locker room and have like a halo that just brightens up as soon as you walk in that says the greatest shooting big man of all time? Like, yo, man, and, you know, and I try to be cool with Karl-Anthony Towns because during 2020, he took some mean L's during COVID season, and I, and you know, but I feel like Now, you know, here we are 4 years removed from COVID. You know, it's time to lay off the boxing gloves and things. What are you talking about, bro? So, Karl-Anthony Towns last week scored 63 points, and they lost the game. But I feel like the Minnesota Timberwolves need to pivot from Karl-Anthony Towns being the face of the franchise, and you got a face of the franchise right now in a dude that's hungry, ready, able, and can make things happen, and that is Anthony Edwards. Like, Anthony Edwards right now, you could argue that you can put him in the MVP conversation this year. It's not even close with what the Ant-Man is doing. I think that they need to have the offense run through the Ant-Man, and Karl-Anthony Towns needs to be the Robin. You already got Rudy Gobert. Like, the Timberwolves have some nice pieces that they can plug and play. I think that Chris Finch, I think, is the head coach's name. I think he's just going to retool things and make the Ant-Man more of the focal point at this point, because at this point, I think that, yeah, they're the number two seeded team, but I don't think nobody in the West is really scared of them boys. And that leads me to the Oklahoma City Thunder, with them being the top seed team in the West. Now, I'm not going to say that they're on the same hype as the Detroit Lions just yet, but everyone has been on the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander hype train, which all the numbers, the footage, the tape, it shows that, yes, he's that dude. I'm not ready to jump in the deep end and be fully vested with my mans. And that's just me being stubborn. And I'll take that. I think he's a great talent. I think I was a little bit hesitant on Chet Holmgren. Chet Holmgren looks like he's going to be able to hold his own as well. You know, between him and the big Creme Brulee and Victor Wembanyama, you already know one of them two dudes is going to get the Rookie of the Year this year. And rightfully so. And they got these two dudes named, they got two dudes named Jalen Williams. Look it up. Them boys are good. You got Lu Dort. I just don't know how much experience do they have. And I don't know if Sam Presti, with all of those draft picks, is going to be able to get a veteran. So here's the thing about the Thunder, though. The Thunder is never going to be able to get a max player free agent. Like, they're just going to have to be able to retool with trades, signing deals, and just get players at the mid-level exception and pray to God that they can keep Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren to stay there, because it's OKC. But OKC, they don't really have a lot of playoff experience. Like, yeah, I think they were in the play-in game last year. But for them, if I am the LA Lakers, if I am the Phoenix Suns, if I am the what's another team? The Clippers, for instance. I don't think I'm really stunting off of them boys. Like, they're not going to keep me up at night. So, you know, it used to be a time and a place where the top seeded teams meant something, but I feel like this year, especially in the West, where the West is so loaded, it really don't matter. Like, it's just, it is what it is type of thing. So, I'm not ready to be fully on the hype train with the OKC Thunder. I'm going to need to see them boys actually get it in. But I do think that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, he's there. He's already been named a starting guard with Luka Doncic in this year's All-Star game. He's there. My man's a star. But I think I'm going to take De'Aaron Fox over him, just his personal preference. But, yeah. But those are your NBA fast break takes. And like I said, you've been listening to the Sports Business Podcast, a Spotify/Anchor original. You can find me on Instagram at Money Comp. You can also find me on X/Twitter at Sports Business. You can also email the show, sportsbusiness@gmail.com. But before we get up out of here, we definitely got to talk about the dummy of the day. And I don't know. So last week I was in Colorado, and I woke up and I saw that the WWE had an announcement that stated something about Monday Night Raw, the longest episodic weekly television show I think has been going on for almost 33 years. Monday Night Raw, they had got an agreement with Netflix, I want to say for $5 billion for the next 10 years to be the exclusive broadcast home for Monday Night Raw, whatever. However, it was around Thursday where I want to say it was the Washington Post, posted a 65 or 67 page court documents of a former WWE employee that was personally hired by Vince McMahon, the owner and CEO of WWE. And before we get too much into the story, disclaimer, the story gets a little dark. I'm not going to give too much details, but if you want to know, you can find the court documents at the Washington Post. I believe the New York Post has posted it as well. But all in all, it leads to human trafficking that Vince McMahon is alleged of doing with an employee. And I'm like, hey, man, there's some things in there in the documents that are pretty damn dark. He basically makes R. Kelly and P. Diddy look like some saints, if we're keeping it real. But the thing about what makes this story really more disturbing is that, like, my thing is this. This is a family-ran business, and you got kids, you know, Vince McMahon's kids were heavily involved, but they're no longer involved. You got his son-in-law, Paul Levesque, who is known as Triple H in the wrestling community, who runs creative talent and whatever. Like, how, you mean to tell me that y'all seen this and y'all didn't, y'all, there's no way you can tell me that this entire family did not know what was going on. And I feel like they're just as guilty, if not guiltier, for allowing this to happen for so long and not say anything. Now, the story goes on that the victim, she was paid off. She had an agreement of an NDA form. I think she was going to get $3 million and that would be it. But Vince McMahon just stopped paying her after he paid her the first $1 million. And that's why she decided to take legal action. Two things. The story is so dark that as someone who watches wrestling on occasion, it definitely makes me look at the entire organization a little bit funny right now, especially the WWE. Like I said, there's no way you can tell me that everybody just didn't know. There's head executives, there's people sitting on the board that kind of threw this under the rug, and not to mention, this isn't the first time that Vince McMahon has been alleged of doing this. I think this is the first one where the story was just so graphic that they had no choice but to usher Vince McMahon out of the board membership that he sat on. The thing about the board membership, when Vince McMahon initially retired, I want to say back either in 2022 or 2023, he came back with the stipulation that he would help with the sale of the WWE, but also he would be able to sit on the board of TKO Holdings, which is now the parent company of both the WWE and UFC. He would be able to sit on the executive membership board, and he could not get fired or, you know, get voted out or anything as long as he was living or he chose to get up and leave. So I believe, I don't know what how much pressure was applied for everyone to kind of get on board and force this man to get up out of office. Needless to say, I'm glad that it's taken place. But also at the same time, like, okay, this man is now no longer sitting there. Now what ends up happening? Because if you're asking me, I think anyone that has any association with Vince McMahon also needs to be removed out of there too. And you could say, well, that's not fair. Well, I mean, I work in a company, and I can tell you right now, I'm pretty sure I know everything and everything that's going on there. And if you're telling me something like this happened, there's no way that's just staying under wraps the way it did. So yeah, Vince McMahon, you definitely are the dummy of the day. I hope whatever happens, you know, like I said, allegedly, in due process, if everything does play out, which if you look at the court documents, this ain't looking good for the home team. So I don't know what the ramifications are. I don't know if he's going to get criminally charged, but at the end of the day, he's definitely the dummy of the day. So Vince McMahon, you got it, bro. And that is the Sports Business Podcast. Like I said, we do this show once a week. Next week, we will go take a deeper dive into the Super Bowl. I'll give my picks, tell you all who's going to win. And yeah, until then, I will talk to you then. Peace out.